This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnat.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And our subject today is...
dealing with new versions of software.
Nice. So we have some follow-up before that. So,
yep.
First of all, keen listeners, so last episode might have noticed that I forgot to cut off the end of the episode.
Keen listener, you mean me?
Well, yeah. Nobody else mentioned it to me, but I apologize for that. Hopefully this week I won't accidentally forget to cut out the two-hour post-show we do, which is going to be incredibly boring.
But that's fine. We're in a tie right now. It's one mistake for me, one mistake for you.
Right. Next up in the follow-up, our number one fan, David Ashby in New York City, sent in a follow-up saying that StageCast Creator, which was in last week's follow-up, as I mentioned on last week's episode, StageCast Creator, it was previously known as Coco and was an Apple product in the 90s. Well, apparently in September of 2014, StageCast Creator shut down, and I didn't notice because it was like written on some page that wasn't visible to me when I went on their website. But yeah, September 2014, rest in peace, StageCast Creator, also known as Coco, technology from the 90s that came out of Apple.
But do they have a new version of it or like a new rebranded software that has the same goals?
No, the company is completely out of business.
Oh, but the website is still up?
Yes. They said Wow. They were going to support their software until December 1st, and then after that, they were shutting down completely. So that sucks. Well, I guess it doesn't really suck because the product wasn't very good, but it sort of sucks for them, I guess.
Yeah.
Next up, I want to talk about the MacBook quite a bit because there are a couple of things we didn't really go into that much detail on in the last episode. I was arguing that they should have gone ARM, and you were skeptical during the episode, but then it came out via this Ars Technica article that it has performance comparable to a 2012 MacBook Air, and that's more or less the performance that you can get out of an iPad Air 2 these days. So do you intend to revise your opinion to say that I am right?
I won't revise my opinion. I would just say you might be right.
Okay. Good enough. If it's the year of Mike, then I can't be right this year.
No, I will guess it's your year will be next year.
Oh, God. Next up, still about the MacBook. Some people on Twitter were arguing about what the point of the MacBook is, the new MacBook, I should point out. And I think it was fairly obvious, but a lot of people don't seem to have noticed, so I'm going to point it out here in the same tone that I have on Twitter. And that is, if you gave the old MacBook Air just a Retina display, then what would differentiate it from the MacBook Pro? There would be like no significant differentiation from the MacBook Pro aside from very, very particular high-end things. So they had to do something to basically differentiate the consumer line from the Pro line, and that is basically what the MacBook does by throwing away all the Pro features to the point where all the pros are bitching about how bad this laptop is for their uses. So that's basically my take on why the MacBook is as extreme as it is, because otherwise the consumer and Pro line are so close together these days that there's basically no differentiation. Your thoughts?
I would like to add that I do think that this new MacBook is like the first gen MacBook Air, so it needs to be like a third computer or maybe a second computer, and obviously for prosumer/pro users, it cannot be their main computer.
Yeah. Last but not least, some big news came out like basically the night after we recorded the last episode, and that is the Nintendo DNA deal, which goes into link with our free-to-play episode, because Nintendo has teamed up with a mobile games company and is going to be making mobile games sometime before the end of the year, which is a huge deal. I'm not going to go into it too much in depth this episode because we have other things to discuss, but we're probably going to be discussing this in one of the coming episodes. That's for sure.
And I thought it was called Dina.
No, it's DNA. It pisses me off when I hear people mispronounce it, especially when they acknowledge that they mispronounced it right afterwards and say, well, I'm going to continue to say it wrong. No, that doesn't pass. I wanted to throw my phone when I heard people do that.
Yeah, but it's written D-E-N-A.
Yeah, well, yeah. I should also point out that DeNA owns the Yokohama Bay Stars, which was the baseball team right next to where I was in Yokohama. So shout out to my hometown, I guess.
And maybe the last note related to that is they bought Enjimoko recently. Like maybe a couple
Not of years recently, ago. But several years ago, yes, they did. And then they killed all of their franchises, which doesn't give me very good feeling about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enjimoko, for those who don't know, was a pretty successful iOS game shop, except their games were actually very good. And they also bought out Freeverse, which, funny story, I was supposed to maybe intern at Freeverse in New York City, but then since they got bought up, the person who was supposed to deal with my internship just stopped existing, so I couldn't go, which sucked.
Ooh, that sucked.
Yeah. That's all for my follow-up. What do you have?
First of all, I have some Apple Watch follow-up. I did something quite geeky this week.
So I saw the pictures.
Yes. So thanks to Mr. Kiselis, I was able to find a PDF that you can print and cut like real-size version of the Apple Watch. So you can try Apple Watches, the paper Apple Watches, before having an appointment to the Apple Store on April 10th, which is, at the same time, pretty interesting to do. It surprised me how small those watches are.
Yeah.
And it made me reconsider a little bit of my decision. Maybe not reconsider, but maybe it helped guide my decision. Obviously, I honestly want to go to the Apple Store and get the feel of those bands, but the three bands I right now want to try are obviously the sport band and the modern buckle and the leather loop. And I would say that the sport and the leather loop in most sizes should be fine for my wrist size. But obviously, the modern buckle is a little bit tight. So might get lucky with the large size, but yeah. So I spent quite a couple, maybe an hour just doing cutting paper and being a kindergarten person or something. So yeah, and I think I'll go, like I said in the last episode, I think I'll go with the sport space gray. Quote me on that in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Yeah. I've been hearing lots of very, very nice things about the sport band, which made me more curious about it, because if I can save some money by going with the sport band and if I actually like how it feels, then I might do that.
Yeah, the main problem I have right now with the space gray model is you only get the black sport band.
Yeah.
And I love green, so I would like to have the green option. But right now I'm thinking about waiting for new bands. Maybe I'll just buy the watch and see you later for new bands. So, care to comment about your last week Apple Watch choices? Or did those changes change?
Nothing really changed for me. Well, what did change is I found $250 on my desk. So
what?
Yeah, I had $250 from when I went to Boston still lying around on my desk. So I might just go to the bank and turn that into Canadian money and have like $300 to spend on an Apple Watch that I didn't think I was going to have. That might influence my band decisions. Like, at this point, it's pretty much guaranteed I'm going stainless steel. But my band choices are basically the same as they were last week, either sport band or the modern buckle. And it turns out I might actually be able to go to Quebec City on April 10th to go try them out. So more after I get the chance to try them on myself.
Yeah, of course. Well, the second I'm able to have an appointment to one of the Montreal Apple Store, we'll obviously comment on those.
Yeah.
But before we speak more long about the Apple Watch, I heard that you got something shiny.
Oh, yeah.
This week?
Yeah, it's called a MacBook Pro. You might have heard of it. Yeah, so I got my 13-inch maxed out MacBook Pro with 16 gigs of RAM in the mail 2 days ago, I think. Yeah, Monday. And it's fantastic. The Force Touch trackpad is breaking my mind every time I touch it.
At least 10 times since you received it, and like, oh my god, like, something is broken on that iPad, like, or on my brain. I don't know what to say. Like,
It's because when you know how the technology works, you're like, okay, this piece of glass is not moving, but why does it feel like it's moving? It makes no sense. And like, everybody's been ranting and raving about the QuickTime Player fast forward button. And that's because it is the most, it's the one where you feel it the most. Like, if you want to push into the trackpad and feel really the whole dimension of depth that you can get out of it, that is the best example to pull out. And it feels great. The only thing I had to go into, well, I didn't have to, but I went into the trackpad settings and I changed the click. I guess it's the firmness of the click. You can go change that.
And how many choices do you have?
You have like weak, normal, and firm. And I chose firm because it makes it feel the most like my MacBook Air's trackpad. Just in terms of like the response when you click on the trackpad. Otherwise, it just doesn't feel as deep or as pronounced as when you click on a MacBook Air trackpad, which is mechanical as opposed to Force Touch.
So on your MacBook Air, you were using the click feature, not the tap feature.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
I'm not an animal.
Yeah, I have some debates with people at work because of that. Every time I go, oh, can I show you something? And then they try to not click and it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh my God, why are you doing that? I'm like, I love it this way.
Oh God.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, so the Force Touch trackpad is amazing. The Retina display, obviously it's not the first time I'm using a Retina display, but like years ago when the original Retina display MacBook Pros came out, John Gruber said something like, even though it isn't the densest display, the densest Retina display out there, in fact, it's like 212 DPI, so I think it's actually the least dense of the Retina displays. You sure don't get that feeling when you're actually sitting in front of it. It feels like the nicest and highest quality Retina display of all of them, which is really baffling. Like Tweetbot and images and everything just look so nice. Now, that might also just be because there are no fingerprints on my screen. That certainly helps.
Yeah. I remember when we were in high school, and then I was always complaining about your fingerprints on your laptop. Ugh.
Oh, well, even then, it's like, I mean, if it was like a touch screen, then there would be like fingerprints all over the screen, which is the case with our iOS devices, which is probably exactly why images don't look as nice as they do on the Retina display on there. But it looks very nice. Only complaint, very, very, very hard to find wallpapers that are that big. I mean, like, I can take photos, that's fine. But like trying to find anime wallpapers in particular that are non-pornographic, that is very hard.
Oh, come on.
It is very hard. It took me a whole afternoon to find one wallpaper that actually looks good. But I'm very happy with it now. So that is about the whole thing. I haven't had the opportunity to work on it yet because as a motivating thing, I am keeping myself from using it for work until my app ships.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So we'll see how long it takes me now.
And that explains why you teased me about that. Like big battery autonomy, you know, you're like, oh, I have like 20 hours of battery usage left. I'm like, what the fuck?
It never happens. Oh, yeah, about that. Shortly before recording, my battery died, and the last time I had taken it off of power was like 25, 26 hours ago. So, yeah, obviously, I didn't use it all day because I was using my MacBook Air to do work, but aside from that, like the battery on that thing is insane for non-Xcode related things, and I will be able to comment on the Xcode stuff later when I'm doing more serious development. But honestly, I don't think it's going to be as bad as you say it is.
Maybe it's because I have the MacBook Pro with a real GPU, but today I work off monitor, off the external monitor, so I was only focusing with the internal monitor. It was a little bit better, but even then, 3 or 4 hours later, it was like, oh, I need to plug it in because I was about to die.
One of the weird things I noticed on one of the MacBook tech spec pages, it might be the MacBook Air. No, not the MacBook Air. It might be the MacBook Pro. Is like one of the two screen models has way better battery life, and it's the smaller one. It's like the 15 inches gets better battery than the 13 inch, but now it's like 13 inch says 12 hour battery, and the other one says 9 hour battery, and you're like, huh? Question mark.
Yeah, don't forget that the
15 the bigger, didn't get updated. So
they didn't get updated, obviously, and big GPU.
Yes, but still very amusing looking at those pages. Anyway, that's about all I have to say about my laptop for now. Unless you have any other questions.
I only wanted to add that we are eagerly awaiting that 15 inch update. Yeah. Good. So that's it for follow up.
Yep.
Good. So now let's jump into my topic. So like I said in the opening, I want to talk about dealing with new versions of software. This is a topic pretty close to my heart because recently, obviously a week and a half ago, iOS 8.2 shipped, and over the weekend I had to update my iOS devices. By the way, did you update your iOS devices?
No, but I can't yet.
Why is that?
I need to update Iconoclasm for a bug fix, and I can't jailbreak 8.2. So okay. I need 8.1 for now, until I fix that bug.
Good. So obviously the first reason I had to deal with new versions of software was because of 8.2. The second reason is because my personal iMac is still running 10.8, and the main usage I have for this iMac is, besides recording this podcast, is Aperture. And obviously, Photo.app got a beta release recently, and I want to be ready when it gets publicly released.
Before we move on, shouldn't you have changed your topic to be actually dealing with old versions of software? Because really, those are the problems here.
No. You'll see. The new keyword is important.
Okay.
So, and lastly, I also need to update my work computer. I'm still running 10.9, and that information is not public, quote unquote, but Xcode 6.3 will need 10.10 to run properly.
Yeah.
So I have to update that computer too. So as you might understand, I have tons of reasons right now to update and to not be lazy about those updates. And obviously in the past, I've been pretty lazy with those. There's a common joke that I always speak to Yannick and colleagues at work is my other nickname besides Luco is hashtag Grandpa Luco because of that. The backstory for that is, I don't remember why it came on the subject, but I was telling my colleague at work that two personal computers, my iMac and my MacBook Air at the time, was still running 10.8.
And 10.8 was a really great release, though.
Yeah. Obviously, that discussion went down the tube, and then we started to speak about 10.6 and my love of 10.6. But you're right, the OS is pretty stable, and obviously after a couple of years right now, it's the main problem is I do want those shiny new features, but that's my problem. So what I wanted to do today is I want to speak about the main three phases that I have identified when a new version of software is released as the user's perspective, But before I start, I wanted to make the small note that this subject won't be about Apple's decision on software updates.
Oh.
I honestly want it more to be I want it more to be about the actual joy or stress of upgrading to a new version of software or maybe changing to a new software.
But what if Apple's decisions come into play into the joy / stress of updating your software?
Yeah, you're right. Like, on some levels, those two points are interconnected. But for now, I don't want to dissect Apple's decision.
Fair enough.
I want to speak about human feelings right now. So let's jump on these three phases. The first phase, I like it to be called the shiny new thing phase. Obviously, you're using your specific software. For example, let's say that I'm a fan of Aperture and I've been using Aperture since version 3.0. And obviously, I love that software. I have tons of workflow. And now, the creator, Apple here, announced a new version. Or, obviously, it could be a preview of this next version. So, obviously, they make a big push on the new feature that will be in this new version. So this will tease the user. We'll see feature that looks awesome, new feature that think you need, obviously wow feature, and also feature that the creator of that software wants you to think that you need. Obviously, if the creator wants new people and people to upgrade, they need to put your reason in that. I would like to know that, in my opinion, this phase is the easiest to go from one to another. And I'll be able to explain it more when I explain the three steps. Just three phases, pardon me. So, obviously, you made a decision that those new features in the new version, you need them. So, you decide to upgrade. And the second you decide to upgrade, you go to phase two, which is what the fuck everything has changed phase. And I like to say that this phase starts when you have decided that you want to upgrade, and the second you click download whichever is your install process. And obviously, since it starts at that point, there might be so much new changes just to get that new version. An example of that is moving from a store on the creator's website to the Apple store, or even the reverse. Recently in the Mac community, we've seen tons of examples for that. The big two I have in mind right now is Panic with Coda 2.5, mainly because of sandboxing issues. And the other big one was from Barebone Software with BB Edit 11. Funny enough, that announcement was made at Singleton by Rich Schickel last fall. Rich had a great talk about what he called Max-Q, and I don't want to spoil his talk, and obviously I put a link in the show notes of this Singleton talk, and I honestly suggest you that you watch it. So obviously, just installing that new software, upgrading this new software, there might be new process to do that, and that might be your first pain point. Now, let's jump to after upgrading. Obviously, the new software is installed. You might have old files that were created or processed by the old version. There might be a need to upgrade those. And something that might happen during this migration is loss of data. That might happen, or incompatibility with the new version. So here, there's another pain point that you might face. But the biggest one is obviously why I call what the fuck everything has changed is obviously the UI of the software by itself. Big changes in the UI, obviously all, I wouldn't say all, but most human hate changes. They love their old shoes. So when something's changed, the first reaction that we all have is complain. And then, oh, it was working better in the past, and complain. And obviously, depending on the decision that the creator of the software makes, your what the fuck level will be greatly affected. I have a couple of examples for that. These examples will make the what the fuck level be at its highest. An example of that is the transition between from iOS 6 to iOS 7. I do know that you still love iOS 6 and you always love to remind me how iOS 6 was way better than the new UI design patterns.
Well, actually, can I put an asterisk on that? Because I disagree with your characterization of my opinion.
Okay, go on. Explain.
Okay, so in reality, how you use iOS 7 is not different from how you use iOS 6. Nothing really changed there. What did change was the aesthetics of the operating system. So textures have changed significantly because now they are no longer there. Everything is white and translucent as opposed to textured and feels like leather. But like when I installed iOS 7, I didn't have this jarring experience where I didn't understand how to use the operating system. I was just having a jarring experience because it was ugly, and it still is ugly. And that's sort of the difference that I have, is that like aesthetically, I'm incapable of dealing with how iOS 7 looks. I believe that actually Yosemite, having used it now for a couple of days, I believe Yosemite is a much, much better and much better thought out redesign of the OS than it was. But I was never confused using iOS 7 about how to do things. I was just, well, this is just an uglier version of what we had before.
Yeah, but even then, I would say that even if you were not confused and you still remember where everything was, the fact that the UI aesthetic changed still affect the way you use the software.
Oh, sure. Like, the animations were slow as shit, and it made me really, really angry because I couldn't do stuff as fast anymore, and I still can't. Not that I'm bitter. But, I think a better example of this, which I had this week, was iMovie. I opened iMovie for the first time in, God, like, what, 4 years? 3 years? Something like that. Because I wanted to try the iMovie first touch trackpad stuff, and I never got it to work because I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. I opened that app, and I have used iMovie almost every version up until 3 years ago, and I could not tell you how to use it now. Like, I opened it, and I was completely confused about how to use it. And I used it 3 years ago, and I know how to use iMovie. Like, I've done stuff in iMovie, significant stuff. But, like, I have no idea how to use it anymore.
Now that you mention it, I'm not sure if I've seen the new iMovie. Because I'm, like, remembering the iMovie X, like, the...
Yeah.
The version after they ditched iMovie 6.
Right.
And if I recall correctly, the UI hasn't changed that much. Like, the UX...
Well, now it has a new mode. So this is what I figured out. So before, you had sort of this universal mode where you could manage your, quote, movie library, where you stored all of the clips from your digital camera or whatever into, like, this movie library that you can then use within iMovie. Well, that is now its own mode, and then when you enter a project, the window completely rearranges and then looks like the old iMovie. But if
what?
Yeah. Well, it looks like the old iMovie 10, not the old iMovie. But like, it's...
Yeah, but the one that was so confusing when they just changed it and everybody was...
The one that looks like Final Cut, basically. I like it because I like Final Cut, but the one that people hated because it looked like Final Cut, yeah, it looks like that once it transforms into the thing. But before it transforms, you're like, what the hell is going on here? I have no idea how to use this app anymore because there's no timeline or anything for the video project, because it's like, well, you don't have a video project open yet. Good luck making one. I think they did such a crappy job with the latest iMovie release to make a case to the user, like, this is how you get from launching the app for the first time to an actual project. Now I expect people who launch iMovie to just, like, be confused and quit it and never use it.
Wow. Now I'm honestly curious. I would like to just install it and play with it.
Yeah.
I'll have to do that at least at some point. So, yeah. If we go back to my list of example, you can touch one example I did put in my small what the fuck level, which is I did even go back as far as 10.7, like the transition between 10.7 to 10.8 or 10.8 to 10.9 or 10.9 to 10.10. Even if the UI design changed between 10.9 and 10.10, I would just like squash those four OSs. Like, even all of those versions introduce difference in the UI, but like you just said about your feeling about iOS 6 to iOS 7, the difference in design is less, not jarring, but less confusing or less...
It's less pronounced. Like, yeah, you can look at Yosemite right now, and you can see exactly where it came from, because it looks very similar to Mavericks from the year before, except just everything that had glare and reflectivity is now flat and matte.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I put this example in the small change. People will have hard time to adapt to that new look. Because
the biggest UI change in the Mac over the last like five releases of OS X has been the inverting of the scroll direction on Lion. When you install Lion and suddenly, oh, your trackpad scrolling is inversed. Good luck. Bye.
Exactly. That's a big one from 10.6 to 10.7 that I have forgotten about it. Yeah. Speaking of which, I was helping a colleague recently. I was trying to scroll, like, in the good direction, according to Apple.
In the natural direction, as Apple calls it.
Yeah, exactly. And it didn't work. I was like, what the fuck is happening? And I'm like, oh, crap. That guy changed the direction.
That guy is going to be so happy when they remove that setting.
I'm sure they'll have a default write command to just re-enable it, even if there's no UI for it.
But like that's also part of the, I guess, the updating cycle is like Apple will change settings and leave little settings behind to let you keep it the old way. But like that setting is going to go away one day, so you might as well just get used to it. It's like my grandpa who every time I update the OS on his computer, he finds some new button in Mail that wasn't there before and then like spends like half an hour asking me what the point of the button was.
oh my goodness.
This has made me want to never update the OS on his computers ever again. But one of the things was like, was it Lion that made the Mail client look like the iPad one? I think it was.
I think so.
It was something like that. It was one of those like iOSification releases.
Yeah, but the problem is I always switch it to the old UI.
Exactly. And he saw the new UI and he was like, I can't use email anymore. And I was like, oh, God damn it. Oh, fine, I'll go set it to the classic view. But like when classic view goes away, what do I do?
Yeah, but the problem, I can already hear people say, why the fuck are you using mail?
Well, but, yeah, that's
another issue.
That's a completely different issue. Yes.
So yeah, since now I've always like I mentioned at the top of the show, I don't want it to be an Apple focus show. So I have Windows examples.
Oh, good. And, yes.
And can you guess which example I found?
Windows 8, all of it.
Yes, but there's a bigger one that I would like to speak before.
Huh. Aeroglass. Oh, no. Windows Vista.
No. Oh. It's not an OS. It's a software from Microsoft.
The ribbon in the Office suite.
Yes. Yes. So, I would like to remind people that at some point around 2005, let's say, I don't know in which year.
I believe Microsoft... it was Office 2003, but I'm not sure. I'll go look it up.
No, but I don't know in which year Microsoft started the development of Office 2007.
Oh, I see.
But with Office 2007, they had a brilliant idea, which is, you know, all of those rows of buttons, I think they call it the toolbars or something like that for...
Yeah, toolbar.
Toolbars, whatever. I thought Microsoft had a like fancy name for it.
No.
But there are rows of toolbars that you can rearrange by yourself. So I want to have the bold commands in that corner and all that stuff that people working in enterprise loved so much, because the secretary can put his or her items where the hell they want. This went away because Microsoft said, let's just bring a new UI, which is the ribbon UI, which is so much nicer, but was a pain in the ass to use.
Does it still exist? I haven't used Office since then. I stopped using Office when they introduced the ribbon.
You know what? I think they still have, like, I think they kind of mixed the ribbon UX with Metro.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So it is still there, but like, kind of, they kind of fixed the problem, the UX problems. So the user experience is way better, but I think they're still lacking customization. So you cannot move tools and tool and buttons the way you were able to.
Right, because like I remember like back in the day, Office on the Mac at least, there was like almost an entire manual just on how to adjust your toolbars and stuff that came in the box for Office. Like, it was this thick book that just told you, like, here's how to customize your toolbars and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
But UI that's exactly how you want. And now basically you throw away that book entirely and you say, too bad, better find new reading material, jerk.
Yeah, exactly. That was, in my opinion, that was the most praised feature of Office 2003 and below. Like, people love to put...
I don't know about most praised feature. Okay. That's a little exaggerating.
A little bit. But throwing the fact that, like, Word, for example, is a word processor, so maybe that's the best praised feature of Word, but, like, people add so much custom feature. They were able to put VBA script in this toolbar, and now it's hidden somewhere where Microsoft doesn't want you to touch. And like, I had to work on, like, in enterprise during that time while I was studying, and people were still using 2003 because of that, because people were still so confused about Office 2007, bearing in mind that I was doing some internship in 2010. That as company with employees having issue with Office 2007.
Yeah, but like from Microsoft's perspective, there were like two things that I think they should have asked themselves. The first is, what percentage of our users are actually using these custom toolbars? And I'm not convinced it's that huge a user base, because like Office has a monster user base. Like, out of those people, I don't think the people using custom toolbars and like that are head over heels in love with custom toolbars, I don't think they're that huge a percentage. And then putting that aside, I have no issue with opinionated UX where like designers say, well, I know better than my user, so I'm going to make the toolbar this way and screw you, you can't customize the toolbar. That is fine if you actually get it right. The problem is that Microsoft, they're not very good on the design front. I mean, like, until Windows 8, sort of, ? So, like, their decisions were very sketchy and just led to lots of screaming. So that made their opinionated UX just even worse.
Yeah.
And one more thing to add on top of that is just that Microsoft, this is going to sound so stereotypical, but whatever, Microsoft users are much more change averse than Apple users, because Apple users keep getting dragged along by Apple by force, as opposed to Microsoft selling things to the enterprise and then never upgrading it ever.
No, you are definitely right, and that is kind of part of the problem that Microsoft still has right now,
and a problem that I would argue Apple is having due to their yearly release cycles and maybe having a faster pace than their users.
Keep that for later. Keep that for later. Good. So after mentioning all of those examples, you kind of get the picture, the big picture here in the phase number two is even the smallest changes in your build of software will make you go, what the fuck? And then after maybe a couple of days, weeks, months, do I go even as far as saying years?
Yes.
Sadly, yes, but depending on which person, it can be as far as years. But what I'm saying here is you're in phase three. So you're cruising on those changes. You've been accustomed to those changes and you enjoy them in a way. You learn to live with bugs, with new bugs, with old bugs that might happen, that might still be there. And like, that's the biggest, like, that's where I think most users are in that phase, because this is the phase that I like to call, I have a couple of names besides cruising on those changes, is, and I love it to call it the lazy boy, or my old running shoes phase, or my old favorite t-shirt phase. It's just something you've been so used to that you just don't want to never change.
Basically, you're back to where you were with a previous version of the software, maybe.
Exactly.
And I qualify that with a maybe because I'm still mad at iOS 8.
No, of course. Yeah, but that's what I meant when I said that most users are in phase 3. Because I put them in 3 phases, but it's a loop, you know? You're start,
yeah,
even
definitely.
If I ended with phase 3, phase 3 is the phase 1.
And like
you're cruising on some changes, and then there's a new version that breaks the status quo, and then you're like, oh, I want to update it, and then you update it, and you're like, what the fuck? And then after a while, you're like, oh, that's nice, and you're back to cruising.
And like, as much as I play up the I hate iOS 8 and iOS 7 aesthetic meme on this show, I must say, like, I'm not going to keep using iOS 6 because iOS 8 brings so many new features and is the way forward. It's like, I tell this to people on Twitter sometimes when they complain and say that they are still using iOS 6, which baffles me, honestly, even though I hate iOS 7 and 8, is like, if you're an Apple user, you better get on the bicycle and keep pedaling towards the new shiny thing all the time. Otherwise, you are going to get left behind so fast. Like, Mac and iOS developers are reckless about abandoning old OS versions. Like, we are used to very high adoption rates of new things, and we are going to leave you behind if you stay behind.
Yeah, because like, we know that is where the money isn't.
Yeah, like,
it's sad to say.
If you don't update,
way,
too bad. You're like a minority, like a very small minority. Everyone else is going to upgrade anyway and put up with the changes, whether they like them or not.
Because
unless Apple really has a catastrophic update, it's not going to happen.
Keep that for later, please.
Yes.
So yeah, so you touched the next part that I want to talk about, which is people like stay on old software. Like, knowing those 3 phases, there will be 4 types of people. I would even say as far as 5. And let's start with the first 4.
Actually, before that, can I just mention something very, very quickly?
Go on.
The new MacBook does not support Windows 7. It only supports Windows 8. And lots of people are very, very, very mad about this on Twitter.
All right. I saw it. Like, even yours, too?
I'm not sure about mine, but I do know that the new MacBook, which they are shipping on April 10th alongside the gold one, basically, with no ports, it only supports Windows 8. And Windows 7 cannot be installed on it at all.
Yeah, Apple has a reputation to do that to boot camp.
Yeah.
Like, you buy the new iMac or whatever, the new computer, and it's like, oh, this computer will only run. We have only the drivers for the latest version of Windows.
Does Windows 7 even know what USB Type-C is? Like, I don't know if that's even a thing.
That might be the part of the problem.
Yeah. But I just thought that went in well with your subject, which is people like old software. Yeah, people really don't like Windows 8.
Yeah, that may be part of the problem. Like, people love Windows 7 so much that they just want to stay on.
Honestly, Windows 7 is the best Windows release ever.
Yeah, because it's Windows XP with security fixes, in a way. And updated modern UI.
Yeah. Okay, but you can go on.
Yeah, I can go on now. So, back to the four types of people. So, I have type 1, which is the person that embraces change. Obviously, the person that is always up to date. And obviously, on iOS, it's pretty easy to do that even on the Mac. Like, you have the auto update for your apps, and voila, you launch your app, and next time it's updated.
Right.
And you don't even know about it.
Yeah, and increasingly you can sort of do that for OS updates too. Like, on the Mac, you can say automatically update my operating system, and it will try to occasionally update your operating system while your system is inactive, sort of like Windows.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah, it did it to me the other day. I like put my computer on the screensaver, and then it just rebooted, and I was like, what the hell just happened?
Oh my goodness.
Like, if you have no applications running that are blocking a shutdown, like, or that have a save dialog or something like that, then it'll just reboot the machine and install them in the middle of the night if you have auto updates on.
Ooh, oh no. Oh my god, it makes me cringe.
So maybe you should go uncheck that checkbox if you have that.
Are you sure it's not the 1010?
No, because it was on my Air. It wasn't on the, I didn't have the new laptop yet.
Oh. Okay. So, type number two, which is the wait and see type, aka is always wait for the ..1 update strategy. For example, for OS 10, always wait for the bug fixes version of the new software.
Honestly, in the recent years, I don't think that's as important. I think the beta process has been actually fairly good at eliminating the big bugs out of those things. I've usually waited for bug fix releases on previous things, but starting with like 10.6 onwards, I've always just done the first release and gotten by fine.
Which brings me back to, let's call it the 0.5 type, which is the person that always runs alpha or beta software.
Oh, yeah.
Or even go as far as having multiple computers so that they are able to have one with the beta software or one with the normal software. It's obviously more common in the dev community, but I know that's just, there are just geeky people that do that on their personal computers too.
Yeah, I'm lucky, I guess, that I don't develop Mac software, because then I would have to do it more heavily than I do now, which is not at all.
Yeah, a good strategy that we have at work is just having different partition.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Or external drives you can boot off of.
Yeah, but and the great idea with internal partition is you just, like, when there's a new update, you install it on one partition, and then you just move to that partition.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I will have to do at some point to move to 1010. I have a 1010.3.0 partition, and I'm using 10.9, and my laptop came with 10.8. So I still have my old 10.8 partition if there's a need for it.
I guess, but at a certain point, like, your SSD gets filled up with OS installs.
You're right. But I would say, like, I think it's, let me think, it's 100, 100, 100, 200. So it's like we want to have three OSs on the same laptop, and then the rest of the hardware is the rest of the,
That sounds very limiting to me, but okay.
Yeah, so sometimes I think so, but yeah. Better be safe than having to install a new software, OS if needed. So yeah, if I'm back to type number three, which is wait until you're forced to upgrade, which
happens, is increasingly us, I guess. Feels like that, which is weird.
Right? It's like, that's why I'm called Grandpa Luco, is because I'm right at that stage, or even at stage four, that will come in a little bit. But most of the time, I upgrade when I'm forced. But you know what? I've been embracing change more easily on iOS than on the Mac.
Oh, same.
Maybe it's because of, like, the computer legacy, in a way. Like, well, you're used to just, like, wait for a bit when there's new software.
Actually, I think it's a lot simpler than that. I think it's, we work on our Macs, so we don't want to fuck up our work by updating the system and having everything go wrong. But on our iOS devices, we basically just have, like, our fun stuff, so we don't feel as bad doing that. I mean, like, I would be very, very disappointed if I updated my iOS devices and they all went to hell. And I guess they sort of come in for work because, like, we test on them, but, like, I still have a counter full of iOS devices to use if those go wrong. But, like, the Mac is, like, how I do my work. If I don't have my Mac, I can't do anything at all.
Yeah, that might be part of the problem too. But do you have that same attitude with your like more personal computer stuff than your work computer stuff?
So if I wasn't a slave to Xcode, I would be upgrading as soon as it comes out, basically, because like that's how I like to roll. I would have loved to update to Yosemite as soon as it came out, but the problem is like, well, first of all, maintaining Iconoclasm is becoming incredibly challenging because old versions of Xcode keep breaking with new OS releases. So that's sort of the reason why I'm keeping my air behind on 10.9 as long as I do, because now I have like one version of Xcode that can actually build Iconoclasm before, and it's the last one that's supported on this OS, so it can't automatically be updated and then screw my entire thing up in the background, which would be problematic and has happened in the past. I kept Xcode 4.3.3, which sounds ancient by now, but it was the version that I was using to compile for ARMv6 because it's the last version that supported those processors. That version no longer runs at all on my laptop because they changed the system framework that it depended on, and now it just refuses to launch.
Oh, wow.
Which is an issue, and it's like even the command line tools that I was depending on just will not run anymore at all, which means I cannot compile for ARMv6 at all anymore, which I guess doesn't matter as much because like if you're still using an iPhone 3G, I'm sorry, but you're not going to get updates anymore.
Right. I think I have, honestly, I think I have old version as of Xcode as far as Xcode 4.2.
Right, but like the problem is even if you preserve those things in a jar and then you update your OS and the OS has that new version of the framework that doesn't work with the old version of the app anymore, you're screwed.
Yeah, you're right, but that might be a little bit easier with the fact that Xcode is not, not the fact that it moved to the App Store, but the consequence of moving it to the App Store.
Like having it all bottled up in the dot app.
Yeah, exactly. Because I looked at one of my backups and it's, I backed up the slash developer folder.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, they did that change when they wanted to put it on the App Store. But quick note on Xcode, don't use the App Store version. Just go to the developer portal and download the IMG there.
I don't know. I like the App Store version because it's not a lot of trouble to keep maintained and up to date.
It's a little bit more problematic, but not that much. And you're safe because it won't get updated behind your back.
Yeah, but I actually, that's part of the stuff that I do like. I do like having auto updates on and having it updated in the background to always be on the latest version.
Yeah.
The only issue is I need a version that is untouched for Iconoclasm somewhere. And right now it's on my MacBook Air and it's probably going to stay there forever until I stop maintaining Iconoclasm at some point.
And that's why I just told you that I'm between type 3 and type 4. And type 4 is never upgrade. And just be proud of being a grandma or grandpa. Yes! But the problem with that is the more you wait and the more you're proud to not update, the more that depression, the more that the pressure is on you. Because there's going to be new feature. You'll be missing new stuff. You'll be missing tons of bug fixes, security updates, and with what happened in the last year or two, where there's a new like OpenSSL fix, security fix, like every couple of months. It's like, even if some part of me wants to stay at like step four, there's other forces that will force you to upgrade because you'll prioritize security or something will force you. So it's really hard right now to stay at stage four.
Well, luckily Apple does a very, very good job of backporting security fixes to older OSs, like several years back, I feel like they do it.
They still support the 10.8 on security fixes.
Right, which like that's insane.
But I'm sure it will stop next year when they'll release the new OS.
I guess, but like, how long are you going to stay on that version?
Yeah, I should.
And like,
soon.
at the same time, like, I listened to you talking about 10.8. Like, 10.8 is nothing. I know people who are on 10.4.
Oh, my, really?
On, like, G4 IMAX, yes. And I'm like, how do you still keep working on that computer? Like, we often, like, as Mac users, we talk about Macs having very, very long lives and lasting longer than comparable PCs might. And I definitely feel like that is true. But at the same time, I look at people who are using, like, 10-year-old Macs today, and I'm saying, like, how are you using the internet at all? How are you doing anything? And, like, why are you using Dreamweaver CS? How does that still run?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Yeah, but I guess we are saying that, but we know that, like, there's tons of people still using Windows XP.
Oh, yeah. And I think we mentioned this on one of the episodes, the article that I read with the guy complaining that software that shipped with Windows 95 was not running on Windows 8 anymore.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Like, I think it was in he
was still using XP, and then XP support stopped, so he felt forced to upgrade to Windows 7 or Windows 8 or something. And then he did it, and then the painting app that he got in 95 stopped working, and then he was very upset.
I think you mentioned that article in the first episode when we talked about iOS 8 bugs.
Well, that guy is definitely a wait until you're forced to upgrade guy.
I wouldn't even go as far as saying, like, he's done never upgrade guy.
But, yeah. Well, he's practically that guy.
Yeah, he's practically that guy. And now we are at the state that we, like, I have maybe, like, it's some tips, some advice that I'm giving to you listeners, but at the same time, I need to listen to them. Because I have a bad track record of
tips to yourself, basically.
Yeah, in a way. So, obviously, how to better prepare yourself for new version of whatever. And is, obviously, try to be more aggressive with the software, this new software version. And make sure that you have smaller dependencies on those software. And what I mean by that is, obviously, you'll find some software that will help you the best. But don't be dependent on, let's say, the version of the software, but more the general picture. So be sure that what you like about that software is a core feature of that software. Because there's more chances that in the future, that core feature will improve, and you won't be forced to switch to another software in the future because that niche feature is going away.
Sounds good.
Next one is digest the changes before start to complain about them.
No.
Yes. And I'm the guy.
That's not as fun.
You know what? Like, I wrote that one in my notes. I was like, I'm saying to digest changes, and I was the one that did an hour and a half episode about iOS bugs.
Yeah, but that's because they existed.
Yeah, exactly. But,
You properly digested the fact that bugs existed in the system before making an hour and a half episode about the bugs in the system.
Yeah, exactly. Pardon me. Okay, good. Next one. Talk to the appropriate people about the new changes and how they affect your usage, whichever if they are positive or not. Because, you know, your opinion about those changes is important, which sounds a little bit the inverse of what I just said, which is digest changes.
Well, once you've taken enough time to get a proper feeling for those changes, if you still have a need to get your opinion out about it, get it to the appropriate people.
Exactly. And I'm sure that at this point, when you have thought about it, that digested those changes, your opinion won't be just, change, and more well thought. And the last tip is learn to embrace change and be open-minded about those changes. And what, like, this also is the problem of that tip. It's just humans hate changes. So it's hard for us to just stay open-minded, but I guess first part to do when you have a problem is to acknowledge that you have a problem. So I guess that's it. We just acknowledge that we hate changes and we need to embrace it. And then we need to go move to the next step, which is mostly those tips that I just mentioned, which is like make sure that you take some time and like just don't be too emotional about those changes. Make sure that you're being rational of those changes and make sure that you have a well thought opinion about those. And before I conclude, I will just mention that for devs, there's a couple of tips that will greatly improve your customer experience, I would say. Like when you are planning or when you are about to release those big changes, obviously previewing those, like maybe teasing those changes. I know it may be a problem, business speaking, to do that, but the more that you prepare your user to those changes, the more they will be able to easily accept them. And then they'll like be able to promote them in the future. Also, when they come back to you with maybe some comments, ideas to improve what you did, just be open-minded too. Don't auto-ditch or auto-accept ideas. Like, just let those changes sink too. Let those opinions sink in too. Wait, think, and then it will be better for everyone. Last part, which I kind of mentioned that I don't want to talk about in that episode, but Yannick had tons of stuff to say about it, but is... We'll talk about Apple and software decision and that. What I wanted to talk about related to that is the latest rumor about the next version of iOS and OS X is that they're supposed to be like, we're going to focus about bug fixes and the, wait a sec. I think it's, the 9to5 Mac article said that the soft, like, bug fixes should be the next, tentpole of the iOS 9 release. Obviously, they'll have new feature, but it should be like a, like we love to call it, a Snow Leopard release.
Which is nice.
Yeah, which
especially
is nice.
Especially considering our first episode.
Yeah. But that's what I wanted to say about Apple's software decisions. Software upgrade decisions.
Actually, when I heard you talk about Apple's software decisions, I thought you were going to bring up iWork because of how quickly... basically, if you open a file with iWork, the newest version, it will upgrade the file format and you cannot open it in the old one. And you basically can't go back to that format. You have to like basically save your stuff out as a Word document and then send it out to older versions of iWork as a Word document so that they can be able to open it at all, which is baffling and it makes no sense.
Yeah, I didn't mention iWork as an example, but I mentioned that in phase two. Like, that's a big what the fuck with the new iWork versions. Like, the fact that you have an upgrade process with your old files.
Yeah.
You have to migrate those to the new version and you cannot downgrade them back.
Yeah, but the problem with that is it's a one-way direction, and I sort of understand the reason why they did it and everything, and I know why they did it, but it doesn't help users feel confident about their upgrades unless they can convince everyone else who they collaborate with on projects to also upgrade their things. And yes, I understand that probably if you're collaborating with other people, you shouldn't be using iWork because you should be using Google Docs, which is actually useful for collaboration, as opposed to iWork, which is a load of crap for collaboration. But...
yeah, we experienced that with our... Yeah, I still have it. It's our podcast ideas.
Which doesn't even show up in my iWork anymore.
It doesn't mine. Which is kind of funny.
It does for you because you own it, but like mine doesn't show it at all anymore.
Yeah, and obviously the second you tried to make a change, it did a merge conflict. And
yes.
And on both our iPads and our whatever one you were using.
But iWork.com is now available to non-Mac users. So if you're a Windows user and you wish to get in on the fun of using iWork on the web, you can go to iCloud.com.
Don't forget it's not called iWork.com anymore.
Sorry, I was thinking about the superior product.
I can't believe it's a web application. And on that failed quote, that's it.
Huh. Okay.
Do you have any thoughts about what I just said? Because you did interrupt me when I was like, you were about to speak about Apple's software upgrade decision and all that stuff. And I just say, like, wait, at the end of it.
Yeah. Do you think a 1-year cycle is too fast for OS 10? Because I feel it is.
I feel it is too. And that's mainly why I'm still on 10.8.
Right. I think like a year and a half, 2 years is closer to the upgrade cycle we should be having. And I understand why they do it the way they do, because they want to coordinate features that can launch across iOS and OS 10 at the same time. But at the same time, I don't think... Well, I see, like, with the new MacBook, Apple is trying to make the Mac go slowly toward the computer appliance direction the iPad and the iPhone are, where you can just mindlessly update the OS. And I don't think as a culture we're there yet, where we can mindlessly do a major OS update and nothing goes wrong. Especially if you have either a printer or a scanner. Like, don't get me started on that, because that will inevitably not work.
Oh, of course. Because, like, the hardware maker will want you to buy the new printer to get the new drivers.
Printer and scanner manufacturers have zero goodwill toward the user to keep maintaining their things, because printers are so cheap and so subsidized by the cost of the billion-dollar ink that goes into them that they have zero reason to actually go ahead and keep maintaining their drivers, which pisses me off. Because inevitably, every goddamn time I update the OS, my grandma's going to call and say, hey, the printer stopped working and I have to go fix the goddamn printer. I love my grandparents, but I hate their computer usage patterns.
Yeah, but the fact that you're doing IT work for them is like explaining why you love them.
Yeah, I guess.
Any more thoughts?
I guess we should touch more on Windows 8, I guess, because it's sort of the other big monster. What are your thoughts on Windows 8?
Honestly, I don't have any thoughts because I haven't used it.
Okay, well then it's going to be my thoughts on Windows 8.
So, you did use it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, before you start about your thoughts, can you explain where did you use it?
Well, Windows tablets and laptops that transform into tablets are very, very popular in Japan. So I have had quite a lot of experience messing with them every year when I'm in Japan.
Okay. So you do have a Japanese friend that have those?
Yes. Well, tangent. in Japan, one of the big game companies these days is DMM, which is also a porn download store, but let's not talk about that. Yeah, okay. It's they are basically like they are a porn download store plus they have in browser games which are in Flash, and of course when you think of Flash games you think of not being able to play them on the iPad. So since they are a huge force in gaming, I can't believe I just said that about DMM, but whatever. They are capable of moving large units of Windows tablets. And I know many, many people who own Windows tablets, especially to play DMM browser games while they are watching television. And as such, I have had significant experience messing around with Windows tablets and Windows laptops that transform into tablets. And they are so bad. But Windows 8, if you are a desktop user, is sort of hell, because it was designed for touch screens for, well, okay. It wasn't really designed for anything first. It was designed as two separate OSs and then sandwiched together by someone who doesn't know what they were doing.
Windows everywhere.
Yes. The Metro part was designed for touch screens, obviously. And the non-Metro part was designed for, well, it basically wasn't designed. It was just taken from Windows 7. But the start button got remapped to the start screen and everybody complained. And I gotta say, like, using it as a desktop user, I can see why people as desktop Windows users found it jarring, because, like, all of a sudden, every major feature that they used of the operating system force them through Metro, which wasn't designed for their desired input method. So then they started screaming at it. And I think that's a valid opinion.
No, I think you're right, because it's like the small experience I had with Windows 8 is like when I go to Future Shop or Best Buy and I just play with it.
Yeah, the fun thing is like you walk down a row of like screens and you try to touch them all to see which one of them are the touch screens and which one of those aren't.
You're right. That's what I do every time. I'm like, which stupid Windows laptop is a touch screen? I'm like, and most of the time you're able to tell which one it is because the non-touchscreen one are matte screens and the other ones are glossy plastic screens.
I guess. But it's still fun to touch them all and then get dirty looks from the staff because you're touching every single screen you see.
But I'm sure they're so used to see that because everybody's like, oh, which one is the touch screen one?
Yeah.
No, not this one and not this one. But yeah, the Metro start menu is a pain in the ass if you're using a mouse.
Yes, it really is. And the thing is, like in Windows 10, it's sort of, they sort of say they're going to be making it better, but they only made it better in the desktop way. And like now if you're trying to use Windows on a tablet, it is more hell than it used to be on Windows 8, which is baffling. Makes no sense whatsoever.
So they didn't move Metro to the start menu and do the small one, the small version of it, even on tablets?
No. What I mean is, like, in Windows 10, they changed the Metro UI so that it, if you choose to use it, which you no longer have to, but if you do choose to use it with a desktop on a mouse, it is easier to use with Windows 10 than it was previously.
Because the screenshot I saw is like it's a new section in the old start menu.
Yeah, no, that works too. Yeah.
Okay, so that's another different mode too.
What are we talking about right now?
Okay, in Windows 8, the Metro UI is full screen. You press start menu, it's full screen. The screenshot I saw
Windows 10. Yeah, it's like the start menu becomes like a column of Metro widgets.
Exactly.
Yes.
And my question is it the same for tablets or is that the Metro version for desktops?
That is the start menu, but the start screen still exists, so you can still go to the start screen on a desktop. I'm not sure how you go to it, but you can.
So they have a condensed version of Metro stuff
the
in
start
button menu?
The start button opens the start menu, which is what you see in that screenshot.
And it's supposed to be easier?
Well, it is, because if you use a desktop keyboard and a mouse, it's there. But the thing is, if you actually choose to go to the start screen, which still exists, not sure why. Well, I know why, because if you have a tablet, it actually is useful. But they've also optimized all of that for keyboard and mouse usage. But the problem is, in doing so, they also made it harder to use on a tablet. So it's like they can't keep their balance right at all. But anyways, before we went on the long tangent about Windows 10, what I was trying to say is enterprises don't want anything to do with Windows 8. It's sort of like how everybody avoided Vista like it was the plague. Well, they're avoiding Windows 8 like it's the plague because they really don't want to have to train people on how to use the start menu, the start screen, and all the Metro stuff that got shoehorned into the OS when it shouldn't have. But at the same time, Windows 10 isn't getting rid of that.
You're right. And they remember all the train people with Windows Vista and...
Like, and the ribbon.
Ribbon and also...
Don't forget
like,
that the ribbon like really screwed up stuff for a lot of people. And that wasn't even an OS release. It was just Office.
Yeah, I know. And don't forget too that Vista was the... Like, can I do that? OS? Can I do that? OS? Can I do that? Can I do that? Can I do that? Can I do that? And they had to train people... just make them say no.
Well,
yes, no,
that's
yes,
why a
no.
lot of them just skipped it, because it was also a nightmare, period. Not just because of how different it looked, but also because it was a nightmare. Okay.
Oh, pardon me. I think things, whatever. So, yeah. Windows, I guess.
Yeah, I feel bad for Microsoft because they have such a huge install base that is averse to change that now... they can basically not do anything cool ever. And yeah. If they try anything cool, well, they're Microsoft, so they inevitably screw it up.
Exactly. That's a typical Microsoft problem. Like, they try something cool that seems cool when they speak about it, but they always miss or do a poor implementation of it.
But on the other hand, I feel like Apple is sort of the opposite, where they are getting almost too aggressive in what they are doing in their updates and maybe pissing off users.
Yeah. We already know that some people were like, fuck iOS 8, I'm waiting, I cannot update, and what the fuck is iTunes, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, don't even get me started on iTunes. This entire episode could have been about not wanting to upgrade iTunes anymore.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned at the top of the show that I didn't want it to be like, what the fuck is wrong with Apple and its software
episode. Just the get info dialogue on music tracks now has made me so upset with the iTunes team that they thought that this was acceptable in the newest version that, oh god.
Oh my. Yeah,
we should probably end this episode.
You see why I didn't want to go in that route?
This is making me so upset now.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll be forced to have a 3-hour episode just speaking about all of those problems, so.
Follow up on all of the broken things.
Yep.
Okay, so is that it?
Yep, wrap it up.
Okay, so if you want to find show notes for this episode, you can go to limitlesspossibility.net/11. You can find all of our episodes, previous and this one, at limitlesspossibility.net. You probably know this because you're listening to it right now. You can find me on Twitter at Sakurina, that's SAKURINA, and you can find Ducarivier
at Luconouche, LUCCONOUCHE.
You can also find the podcast itself at Limipo_podcast on Twitter. And we await your feedback. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
See you in 2 weeks.